everybody, and welcome to part two of the episode Suicide is Painless. Make sure you pop over and listen to part one first before you do this, so you can hear us chat all about
everything.
Derek actually apologizing, Cali, Arizona, Mark, Richard, many other things. Want to make sure that you found that one first. But after you have listened to that and you are safely and fully caught up, you can come back and join us. And we're going to start with everyone's favorite segment, Living in Shondaland.
Living in Shondaland!
Ugh, wow. It's such a different experience live.
I know. I feel...
really, it's like listening to your artist on your album versus in concert.
Never meet your heroes, kids. Unless it's us. We're great. Also, dude, before we get into all of this, gentle trigger warning.
Yes.
For everyone. This episode gets intense.
There's PTSD. There's explosions. There's
death.
Suicide, death. And yeah.
Yeah. So before we get into the happy Shondaland part, just want to talk about the somberness of reality.
Yeah.
So, all right. How many people do we have in this one?
One.
Is it the girl? The cancer girl?
Yes.
Yeah. That is Roseanne's daughter, correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yes, I knew I recognized her.
Yeah. Okay. That is Sarah Gilbert. She plays Kip Allen.
Yes.
She was in one episode of Private Practice that we have seen. That
we
I
have?
Do think is memorable.
I would have to go look, but I think I probably recognize her as Roseanne's daughter.
The episode, it's like season one.
Okay.
Where Sam gets on a house call for the girl.
Yes,
robbing
yes, yes,
the
yes,
gas
yes,
station.
She shoots the guy.
She's the guy who robbed the gas station.
Yes. And it turns out that they had a kid together.
Yeah.
And
or she was pregnant with his
kid. She was pregnant with his kid. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I do remember that.
Yeah.
And he was in an episode of Psych, I believe.
He was also in an episode of Grace.
Yes, he was. And I think I also at that point said he was in an episode of Psych.
Probably.
So, yes. Wow. Living in Shondaland, keeping it simple on this one. That's nice. Sarah Gilbert.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Did you watch Roseanne?
No.
I did. Nick at Night.
Yeah, it was on that a lot, that's for sure.
Yeah, Nick at Night had that.
Then she just took an Ambien and, quote unquote, became a racist. Because that's what Ambien does to people.
Man, yeah, that's...
You ever just take sleeping medication and then just... hate other races.
Yes, actually.
Common side effect.
The thing is it's alternating. So every other day, once I take the Ambien, it erases it, the feeling from before.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. So I'm very racist 50% of the time.
It's awful. Anyways, okay.
Goodness.
So we're going to start
Don't be racist.
Please. Please. It's such a simple ask.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this episode, Owen voiceover, we mentioned last one, starts with Owen not being able to sleep.
Yeah.
He's with Christina. My caffeine's wearing off.
Here, let me throw this open caffeine to you.
So he's with Christina. She's asleep. He cannot sleep. So he gets up, does a bunch of push-ups for some reason. That's what all these men keep doing in the show. Because last episode, it started with Mark doing push-ups in his apartment.
Yeah. We've never seen Derek do push-ups.
Shocking. I wonder why.
Derek can't do a push-up.
How many push-ups can you do? Like right now, if I was like, do push-ups, how many could you max out at?
Four.
Same.
I don't know.
I think maybe four. Honestly, probably three. Four, it might be pushing it.
Yeah. I
am so... like my upper body strength is so bad.
I need to really get back into it. Part of my problem is I have had so many actual like finger and wrist injuries from playing baseball all my life. That's number one. But also I probably could do more. I'm cutting myself very short out of, I feel like a fat loser. Sorry. Out of shape. I'm out of shape. I am
not where you want to be.
Not where I want to be
in your
health
journey
at the moment. But yeah, no, not many. Not many.
Yeah.
Also, I could you do a pull-up?
No. I can't do one.
I can do a pull-up. Nope. I could do multiple pull-ups.
No, I cannot do a singular pull-up.
So I could probably do two, maybe two pull-ups. There's probably health nuts at home going like, two pull-ups?
Yeah.
I do two pull-ups to warm up for my 1,000 pull-ups.
Yeah. Literally, like, guys, I'm not getting like...
Yeah.
When I was in high school, though, I could leg press like over 200 pounds.
Yeah. High school, Carmen was a very different
when
version.
When I was swimming?
Oh,
I was
for
like,
sure.
Nothing but muscle.
Well, when I was doing wrestling... Push-ups was like, it was the drop and give me 20 mentality of the army, right?
Right.
Like, oh, you decided you need water right now after you just wrestled? Okay, drop and give me 1,000 push-ups.
How dare you?
You stupid bitch. Hydration is the key to weakness. So yeah, Hunt's doing push-ups. It's so interesting. He wakes up.
Like 3 in the morning or something.
Yeah. Does push-ups, eats a full breakfast, then goes back to bed.
To pretend to wake up.
Yeah. How Christina does it, I would have woken up.
Yeah.
I'm a light sleeper. When Jessica gets out of bed, also when her alarm goes off, I'm like, Jessica, just turn your alarm off. I hear it. It's loud.
Yeah, I heard it the other day, and I was like, this is loud, and it keeps happening.
Yeah.
I know you're deaf, but please.
Yeah.
Sorry, the yawns.
It's okay. The yawns
really
are real.
The nap time is really right now.
We should just skip your flight.
Oh. Okay. So I will say with the bed, the light sleeping, we have the sleep number, which is nice because you can't really feel when the other person gets out of the bed because it's like different mattresses.
Yeah.
So that is nice.
It's nice. That's what we got to get. The next big expense that we're going to get is going to be a new bed.
Yeah.
I need it.
It's worth it.
The bed that is in the spare bedroom that mm-hmm. you had is the bed that I bought for myself.
Yeah.
And the bed that we have in our bedroom is very different.
Yeah.
And I think I prefer the more firm.
Yeah, that's bed. How we are. Like, I prefer more firm, and Michael wants to be sleeping in a mashed potato.
Yeah, than actual water bed.
Like, actually, and I'm like, he has his, like, sleep number is, like, almost as low as it can possibly be. And mine is, like, 90 out of 100.
Yeah. Very similar. So... Yeah, Hunt's got an interesting... He's got some triggers going
on
here.
So, yeah, Teddy goes to Owen at the beginning. Well, first she goes to her patient. And she's like, how are you doing? And her patient's like, I'm ready.
To die.
She doesn't say that yet. She just says, I'm ready. And then Teddy goes to Owen. It's like, I need a consult. And then it's revealed that she's like, my patient needs help dying. The state requires 2 doctors to sign off. So she's like, surely Owen, my best friend, a normal person, will sign off on this.
Normal person.
That's where she's mistaken.
Yes. It was at that point that Teddy's grave mistake threw a wrench in her plans.
So psych, first of all, they say that psych has signed off on Kim being like of sound mind to make this decision.
Which feels like the most important piece of this puzzle.
Yes. So that has been, and Owen like will not stop pushing it. Now, clearly, it makes sense at the end of the flashback situation. It all comes together.
I knew that that was going
to
happen.
But to get there is bad.
Yes. Yes. So also, we are led to believe that Hunt is a pretty professional guy.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't really make, a lot of mistakes or slip ups or bad choices in front of patients a lot. But when Teddy is talking through this with Kim and he just stops and walks away.
Yeah.
In the middle of the conversation, Teddy's like, I just got to go check on that.
Yeah.
Whatever that was, I got to go look into this.
Yeah.
But it is very interesting because Kim is asking questions. There seems to be a disconnect between Kim and Sean.
Yeah.
Well, I would have also put money that Sean was living in Shondaland. He seems like he has a very recognizable face
somehow. Agree.
And, but this girl is, she had stage 4 cancer. They did surgery. It came back like worse than ever.
It was going to be like 6 months to live.
Yeah.
And it was just going to get like a horrendous pain. Like her entire life was just going to be about pain management.
Yeah. A lot of oxygen she's been on, loses her breath after one sentence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in the spirit of learning, this is a teaching hospital.
Damn it.
So I did want to talk about, because this is 2010. At this time, I think there were only like three or four states that it was in the United States that it was legal for physician assisted suicide, or they also call it like death with dignity, or aided suicide. Like there's lots of different terms for it in the both the medical world and like the legal world. Now it's actually, there's more states. I think it's 11. So it's California, Oregon, Washington State, Vermont, Washington, D.C., Colorado, Hawaii, New Jersey, New Mexico, Montana, and Maine. Those are all of the states now. There's also many, many countries where it's legal. And state-wise, there each state has its own set of rules. Like where how in this episode, they say like two physicians and psych have to sign off on it. Like there are lots of hoops to jump through, or like, quote unquote hoops. I wouldn't call them hoops. Like just lots of things to like ensure that everyone is making the right choice and like everyone is being cared for in the best possible way. I also, when I was going, looking this up, it's really just when it comes to this, it comes down to quote unquote, like ethics. That's where most of the debate comes in.
Yeah. That makes sense.
I read a lot of physicians' opinions, like written in the way that like a Supreme Court writes an opinion, right? It was really interesting to read. I personally would say I am on the side of pro assisted suicide. But I also am on the side of going through the steps to making sure that like this is like it is, you know, it shouldn't be taken lightly. It doesn't, like, we need to make sure it isn't something that gets abused or anything like that. But that would be my take on it.
I would have the same take. And actually we get kind of a funny scene where Mark doesn't put his foot in his mouth.
Yeah.
Teddy walks up, is like, hey, what's your thought on physician's assisted suicide? He said, I'm not against it. However, we do need to talk about arena football, because that shit is fake fucking football. At least he wasn't like, yeah, you know, the moment I met you, I thought you should really look into this. But yeah, so just in general, I think it's the dignity part for me is the thing that like really stands out. It's different. I think there's a whole separate conversation in the medical field about like the assisted euthanasia, which I think is more someone choosing to end someone else's life on their behalf if they can't make that decision.
Right, which is very different.
Very different. But the physician's assisted suicide to me feels, as long as they're covering all of the steps, the sequence, mm-hmm. the chain of events that needs to be really locked in, psych sign off, there's no duress, there's no ulterior motive. It's not like, it would, you know, someone, it's not like they're sitting there going, oh, we are going to harvest your organs the second you kill yourself. Like there's a lot of things that go into this. I think that they're doing the right thing, but I also can see how I can see and empathize with the opposite of that, where a doctor can be so against it.
Yeah. A lot of the opinions I read, they were very well spoken.
Yeah.
They made a lot of fair points specifically about the physicians and Hippocratic Oath.
Yes.
Which I understand if you take that oath. It's a direct contradictor. Yeah, it is in a way, but I think you have to kind of open up the, understanding of like what do no harm means, because sometimes when you get to that end of life care and you're just pumping people full of medication, or like to their point in this episode, like ramming a tube down her throat, like she's conscious, they're not doing that and she's in a coma, like she would just be awake with a tube down her throat. Do no harm can mean more than just like causing physical pain. And I think that I definitely understand where it is more an ethical dilemma than anything else. I understand both sides. I really do. But I think that is really where it comes. Like there are definitely physicians who are going to believe the only way to follow the oath is to just constantly be fighting for a patient. And I think I was also reading an opinion by base. It was essentially like the American Institute of Hospice and Palliative Care. And they're even within that, it's still a debate. It is more kind of widely accepted as like a form of palliative care. But it is still debated in that realm as well. So it was really interesting reading for me, not in that field, obviously.
Yeah.
But it's also, it has definitely come a long way, even just since this 2010.
Yeah. It's interesting. The most interesting thing about all of this to me, which as we were talking about this, I remembered that there was a scene in Private Practice where Sam and Pete go to the guy's house and he's like, yeah, I'm ready to do this.
That's illegal.
Right.
What they did was illegal. And I don't really understand if there was just like, they didn't want to take the steps to offer this, because he definitely met the qualifications. He also was in a lot of pain. He also was at end of life. I don't really understand what the situation was with him.
Yeah. The thing that's interesting to me is the methods.
Yes.
Because was it house or was it scrubs or maybe it was Grays, and I'm just like getting everything blurred together at this point, but
possible.
Someone said, oh, a nurse is going to accidentally give you too much morphine and you're just going to fall asleep and you're just going to end up dying. I think it feels like it was House.
Yeah, that definitely wasn't Grays.
And that to me, like, is overdosing on the pills more painful? Like,
I think, and
to think of it saying that she said it was took 45 minutes to die. Mm-hmm. That is not how TV represents it. It's like, they kind of like pass out. It's like very quick.
Well, I think it again depends on the method of, I mean, because there have been episodes of Grays where they're like, we're going to unplug them and it might happen immediately and it might take like 4 hours and we don't know.
Right.
And so I think that, so what they say in this episode is that in Washington State, the doctor can't administer the drugs. They can only give the prescription and the patient has to administer the drugs themselves for whatever reason. It may or may not be. I didn't really get into that when I was doing my reading. I'm sure it's just legal protections.
Right.
So that might be part of it. I also find it interesting because, like, obviously they're going to prescribe something that is like foolproof. They can't prescribe something that's like, maybe it will kill you, but also maybe it will go wrong. Like,
correct.
They're going to have to do something that's like for sure going to do it.
Yeah. Like, you can't take 100 ibuprofen. We need you to take 100 oxy or something. Yeah, I don't know, whatever.
They just said barbiturates.
Yeah.
So I think that's the thing that like slows your heart and just like puts it all down.
Yeah.
So also when I was reading, they were like, the physician has to advise the patient not to do it in a public place. And I was like, oh my God.
Fair.
But for that to like be needed to put in writing, like obviously.
Well,
first of all, obviously they should advise them not to do that. And also, who wants to do that?
What if they're sitting there and they really want to die looking at a sunset on the beach as their dying wish?
I guess I see that. That was not, I like in my mind, I was like, they're just like in a crowded movie theater. Like, why would you do that?
That's so morbid and bleak, like, but that caught me off guard.
I just literally was like, why would you want, like, why would you
want to
be like just in a park surrounded by children? Like, that's unsettling, but that is a good point.
You know, but it ends up then you go into this whole conversation. Like, we can go down the rabbit hole of, if you're doing it in a public place, there's a little bit of it that's selfish, but also your life is ending. You're ending your pain. It's a selfish.
So I actually, like, to her point where she originally wanted to do it at home and then changed her mind to the hospital, I thought that was a very selfless decision.
Yes.
And I thought the husband kept being like, it's fine. But I thought she had really put a lot of thought, not only into what it was for her, but like how it was going to, like, everything she could do to, like, obviously it was going to be a traumatic situation for her husband and like a heartbreaking situation and like just the worst, but she was doing absolutely everything in her power to could like not to put the least amount of extra burden on him as possible.
Yeah. And she knew what she wanted. She's like, I want my quilt. Mm-hmm. I want my red wine. I want
a real wine glass,
not a cup.
Some pictures.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's so sweet. obviously we get to the end. We'll get there in a minute. But I think that she was being as selfless as possible. It's a weird thought, though. Like, if I was going to do that, I wouldn't want to just be in my house. Like,
well, that was also something else I thought is like, then your house is also the place where your spouse died.
Correct.
Like, and yes, there's always like something about like, oh, they passed away at home surrounded by loved ones. I'm like, yeah, but for me, I'm like, then do I want to continue to live there? Because I have all these happy memories with this person, but I also have like the memory of this is where they died.
Right.
So, and obviously I've not been through that, so I can't speak on that. That's just like, that was kind of something I was thinking about.
Yeah.
But even like, there are people who move away after a spouse dies, even if they don't die in the house, because they're like, well, this is where all of our memories are. And for some people that's helpful, and for some people that's harmful. So I don't know what I would do.
Everyone's got their journey.
Yeah, that's so true.
So in the essence of time, in the essence of time. Gosh, what a fucking moron. In the interest of time. So Hunt leaves that conversation. I think I was able to boil it down to the biggest discrepancy between Hunt and Teddy.
Yeah.
Hunt sees it as murder, black and white. Teddy sees it as mercy.
I don't think Owen sees it as murder.
That's the way it is to me. He keeps saying, you're killing this person.
Well, that's because he feels like he killed Dan.
Well, he does feel like that.
Well, and I think that's where it's that. And that's why he runs in and says, what if they come up with a cure? Because that was his reality. He was like, we just have to keep waiting. We just have to keep waiting.
They're on their way.
And Dan's like, it's too late. And the second he lets Dan die, here comes the helicopter, because of course it is.
Of course.
Did you ever see the movie The Mist?
I never saw the movie The Mist. I know the whole plot point of The Mist.
I hated it for so many reasons. I, to this day, don't know why I would have ever watched that, but I did. And I think about it a lot, and I fucking hate it.
He kills his kids, and then he kills himself, right?
He
ends up not killing himself.
There's not enough bullets. Spoiler alerts for The Mist, which came out in, like, 2004, so I don't feel bad. But, yeah. Yeah, so there's this big mess. No one knows what's going on. Also, it's based on a Stephen King novel. The novel ended differently, and Stephen King himself said, if I had thought of this ending, like the movie ending, I would have written it that way.
Respect.
So, yeah. So there's not enough bullets for him to kill the kid and the other like two people that are there. And he's like, we're about to die. So I'm just going to kill you, and then I'll let these giant bugs take me. So he kills them all, gets out of the car, and is like yelling so that the bugs come and find him. And it's fucking the army tanks have killed all the bugs, and they're rolling in to save everybody. And that's how it ends.
Yeah.
And that terrible. Keeps me up at night.
Yeah.
Also, the giant bugs in that movie keep me up at night.
Also, the world is so fucked up.
Yeah.
I was reading an article last night. I told this to Jess as you guys were done with your hangout session.
Our cuddle time.
Yeah. And I was like, Jess, I just read an article about a dad who walked into his daughter's house and saw the daughter and her daughter beaten to death by the boyfriend.
Horrific. I hate everybody.
Like, 4-year-old daughter and his daughter.
Yeah.
Or 4-year-old granddaughter. Like, the world
capital
is fucked
T.
up.
Capital trauma. Capital all letter
that
drama.
Is every single. Yeah, that is a
all
T
the letters are capital.
Period R period. Yeah. Yeah. It's no good. So ladies out there, don't trust your boyfriends.
Well,
don't even trust your husbands.
Don't trust people.
Don't trust humans. So anyways, all right. So I like that this storyline is flipping back and forth between Hunt's flashbacks and the actual pieces that are causing the trauma.
Specific things are triggering his
PTSD.
Flashbacks.
Yeah.
And I find that to be very well done. Like just the exposition of how he's getting from the present day to his flashback makes a lot of sense. It tracks. I do think recently you had said that you like really hoped we got more backstory on Owen and what happened when he was deployed. And
add another correct prediction to Carmen's win column.
I don't think you predicted it. I said you wanted it. You were like, I hope we learn more about Owen's
which
past.
Is a prediction.
So anyways, I think they did it justice.
Yeah. And it starts with Teddy walking away.
Yes.
Teddy's walking away and they get to a soccer scene.
Yeah.
Which is cute.
Yeah.
They're acting like a couple in a relationship.
Yeah.
He's not acting like a man who has a fiance at home.
I hate it when people do this in real life and in TV shows. It's not like, oh, we're just friends and we happen to be opposite sex. Like, it is just full on. Like, they touch more than married people touch. They touch more than anyone in any relationship has ever touched.
Yeah. The getting on the back would have been innocent enough.
Mm-hmm.
But then they get down and they're holding
hands.
They're
like lingering with like arms around each other, holding hands.
Yeah. A little uncomfy.
Like, honestly, yeah, I'm all for like the celebratory, like jumping on the back. That to me does feel friendly, platonic, like that. I can buy that.
Right.
But the continuation of it, I'm like, okay. And I'm like,
it's like if
relatively touchy-feely, like huggy, right. We're huggy people, but like, it's too much.
It's like if we were playing partner swap soccer, right? Mm-hmm. We scored a goal on Michael and Jessica. Mm-hmm. You jump on my back. And then we hold hands walking to dinner.
I hold Jessica's hand all the time. I actually did say when we went to the birthday party, because there were so many people there that she hadn't met before, I was like, do you think that some of those people thought that we were like a partnership and like we were both Marlo's moms?
They all know me.
All so of them?
Most of them.
Some of them.
Also,
That doesn't change. You can still be her dad.
That's fair.
And Jessica and I can still be a partnership.
Just a sperm donor for your relationship, for your surrogacy. Yep. Anyways, yeah, it was weird. It was a little uncomfy to watch. So it starts with the soccer. They clearly are getting called to action.
Yeah.
And you get kind of like a firsthand take of how bad it was in Iraq, right?
I believe it's Iraq, yeah.
And they run out of certain supplies. They've got this one dude just in a garbage bag. They're like, we need to wrap you up in a garbage bag. We're going to duct tape you because we ran out of sterile supplies. But now also we need to move our entire operation to a different point.
Yeah, because like a sandstorm was coming in or something. Yeah. So they were like, we just have to get everyone stable enough to move.
Yeah.
So they get a couple of them stable enough. I think Teddy goes in the helicopter with two or three of them.
Yes.
And Owen's like, are you sure you want to go? Like, you hate helicopters. I can go and you can go in the truck. And she's like, no, I'll go with him. It's okay. Like, I'll meet you over there. And so she goes in the helicopter and Owen goes with Dan and another lieutenant. Another doctor.
Yeah.
And Dan is the sergeant.
He seems to be the commanding officer.
He's definitely the commanding officer. I'm really bad at knowing the rankings in the army. Dan is in charge. Dan is a superior. And then I think they have one or two patients. And then the guy driving and then Owen and Dan in the truck.
So did you get any Iron Man 1 vibes from this? Iron Man 1 vibes.
Yeah. Oh, maybe I'll watch that later.
It's a good movie.
It's a great movie.
One of the, I mean, it's not the best Iron Man movie.
Yes, it is.
You're right. Now that I say that.
It's like far and away
you're
is
right.
The best Iron Man.
You're
it's
right.
Not,
you're right. You're
it's
right.
It's not
you're
the
right.
best movie Iron Man is in.
You're right.
It's the best Iron Man movie.
That's fair. The third, honest, let's not forget the cinematic masterpiece of Iron Man 3.
So bad. Every time I say that, Michael's like, it's not that bad. And I'm like, I just am concerned.
No, you know,
you
it's not
and
that
I were
bad.
Watching
Thor Dark World is not that
Thor
bad.
Thor Dark World is absolutely not that bad.
Thor Dark
it's
World
kind
gets
of horrendous how many people shit on that movie.
Yeah.
It's not that bad.
Yeah.
Anyways, okay. So
what did you make that face for? What did you think I was going to say? You like made a face like when I said, you know, it's not that bad. You were like, oh gosh, what is Carmen going to say?
Probably
right now?
You were going to say something about like all the Captain America movies, which as movies, they're not that bad.
I do think that all the Captain America movies are better than all the Iron Man movies. However,
wow.
I don't think that Captain America is a better character than Iron Man. Captain America 1 takes place in World War II.
I understand for you that matters.
Yes.
For me, that I actually very actively do not give a shit.
You know what?
About World War II, just about that's the setting for that film. I just don't fucking care.
No, Iron Man 1 is pretty good.
Iron Man 1 is very good, and it is the beginning
of
it all.
Such a good villain.
Great villain.
Jebediah.
What a bitch.
Man, fuck that guy.
The arc reactor.
Tony Stark built this in a cave. He reminds me of your dad, though. Like, if your dad was a villain, it would be Jebediah.
Oh, no. I can't wait to tell him that.
He's just like, because he's like this cool dude, but like you don't want to piss him off.
Yeah.
And I feel like I could never do anything that your dad would ever actually be mad at me.
That's probably untrue, but
he's my boy. I have an ornament that hangs on his tree.
That's true, but so do I. I have more.
I didn't say he would be mad at. Well, I know
he absolutely would be mad at me.
All right. Focus.
Let's
take a quick moment for our retail sponsors. Okay.
Yeah, sorry.
We'll be back after these messages.
Be back for the IED in just a minute.
And we are back.
The way I almost always say IUD, which is very different.
Inner uterine device.
I know that's in poor taste, but I misspeak it a lot.
Yeah. IED.
Yeah. So obviously they're like trying to get in touch with wherever they're going to make sure that like Teddy's gotten there and also to make sure that like all the stuff is ready for them. And
don't worry. Your girl's going to be fine.
We're just friends. Derp, derp, derp.
Hey, shout out.
So they can't like get a hold of anyone. They're like, oh, well, there's a state. Like, it's probably just from the storm that we can't get a hold of anyone. And you know what? Maybe it is. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's never really specified. However, the fact that it's established that they can't get a hold of anyone, which means no one can get a hold of them. So it's going to be once they hit this and there's this mass injury, it's going to be bad.
Yeah.
And it is.
It is truly insane. And it's just one truck. It's not a convoy. It's one truck.
Yeah.
So they're in this medical truck. Owen is fine, relatively speaking.
Yeah.
One guy is burnt to a crisp.
I assume that was the driver.
And then there's the other guy that was with them.
With the trash bag on his
tummy. The trash bag patient. One other guy who seems to be dead. He is dead.
Yeah.
And then Dan, it's unclear. He has a gash on his neck, but the car also fell on his legs.
Like it's like completely pinned.
Yeah.
Completely pinned. We don't see that right away. Like Owen stumbles out of the truck, sees the patient, like checks the patient. The patient is dead.
Yeah.
Sees the driver being just a burnt skeleton.
Yes.
And then sees the other patient and then and he's like talking to Dan this whole time. Like Dan's speaking. So I think his assumption is like, oh, he's probably fine. He's also just kind of like getting his bearings.
Right.
And then he comes around the truck and Dan is on the ground, like holding because there's a gash in his neck to your point. And like blood is just like spewing. So he's like holding that. And then the truck is pinned on his leg, which like there's also the big artery here.
Yeah.
As well. Is that
your femoral artery?
Yes.
This is your.
This is carotid.
Carotid and femoral.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so.
Look at us in our medical degrees.
It's the book. It's the book.
It's a teaching hospital, damn it.
So.
Can I say something that's in poor taste?
Yes. Thank you for asking. You don't normally ask.
It's more in poor taste than usual.
Oh, no.
Because considering the circumstances.
Okay.
The burnt person, which we're believing to be the driver, is giving Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru from Star Wars
episode
4.
It's giving Pompeii.
It's
that was actually my thought that I wasn't planning on sharing. Because it's also in poor taste.
We respect your traumas.
It's giving joy.
If I were a fish. Fuck. Anyways, yeah, okay. All right, I'm glad we had that moment there. We're terrible people, but the dark humor keeps us going. So
we do it for the fans.
We do it for the fans. So Dan clearly needs help, and Hunt's like,
I can do this. I mean, he's a trauma surgeon. He potentially probably can do it.
He did.
The issue is the battle was with Dan.
Yes.
Not with the medicine.
Wound. Yes.
There's also an injury with his arm that we don't really see because they're like, Dan says you have to tourniquet it, which here's the thing with a tourniquet. If you tourniquet something for too long, you're going to lose that limb.
Yes.
However, in this situation, you're going to have to, because otherwise you're going to lose all that blood and that's going to be the cause of death.
Yeah.
So it's life over limb essentially is what you're deciding. It's more important that you're alive with one arm than dead with two.
Well, this guy would have potentially no arm and then no two legs.
Right.
I'm led to believe that he was pinned losing circulation to his legs.
At least one.
Yeah.
If not both.
And so the next couple of scenes, so Dan is like, Hunt said, I need to get the ring off your finger. He gets the ring off his finger.
Oh, yeah.
And there's kind of this funny moment. You think he's going to make it because he's being comedic. He's like, don't give that ring to Teddy.
Give
it to my wife. Yeah. So,
but I mean, we also deal with trauma through joking. So totally. On our deathbed, we might also be making inappropriate jokes.
I hope so. And he's like, well, there's no morphine and there's no lidocaine. And he's like, did you bring the whiskey? And he's like, no, I didn't. And he's like, well, yeah, I guess not. Then he just moves his hand. He's like, yeah, you're right. There's no whiskey. This is it. Take me home, Jesus.
Yeah.
And I was having a hard time seeing, did he give up or was he saying, no, you're right. Did he pass out or did he give up? I was having a hard time differentiating.
When he's asked about the whiskey.
But then he moves his hand the first time.
I think he's also just like kind of out of it. And like he might not really realize what he's doing. And also that might be like how he's showing Owen that he also has this other boo-boo. He also might not even realize that there is that wound because of like adrenaline and stuff. So he could just like have his hand there and then he like goes to move it. And then it's like, oh, that's why it hurts.
Yeah.
Because you can't see that. So like potentially he doesn't know that it's that bad. He just knows there's pain there. And like sometimes when you have an ouchie, you just put pressure on it.
Right.
That could be anything, but it's bad.
It was, because it immediately is gushing blood.
So it's lots of back and forth of Owen trying to like problem solve and doing it. And then Dan gets hypothermia and he's like, oh, that's the last step. It's like hypothermia when you're dying of blood loss.
And this is hours later. This is at night.
It's nighttime. Yes. Yeah. No one's come still. And so then it's Dan ordering Owen, like, let me die. I don't want to do this. It's like, it's too much. Just let me die, please. Also, Owen does try and move him and it's unsuccessful.
Yeah.
And Owen's like, I won't let you die. And he's like, I'm actually ordering you because I am your superior officer and you must listen. And Owen's like, bet I won't. And so
then court martial me, sir.
Yeah. So there's a lot of back and forth about it. And then it gets to the point where Owen's like, okay, yeah, I mean, this is clearly what this man wants. He's miserable. He's in pain. Like, I should let him get to control how he dies.
Yeah.
And well, even this leading, is what he wants.
Leading up to that, there's that scene where Dan's like, I just want to do the Hail Mary. And
oh, yeah. Do the Hail Mary.
Can you
with
do the
me.
Hail Mary with me? And Han's like no. I don't know that.
And he's like, well, just like I'll do it. And you just do it with me.
It's sad when they get to that point where Dan's like, you have to do this. I can't do this for you.
Yeah. And Dan tells Owen to propose to Teddy.
Yeah.
And then he says, and let me die. Yeah. This is your to-do list. Propose to Teddy, let me die. And Owen says no. And this flashback is when, after Derek has told Owen to leave, so he's standing out in the pouring rain outside the hospital and makes the decision to go back in.
Yes.
And obviously, because of that, his argument is, what if they find a cure tomorrow?
Yeah.
Which is, like, fine. And he asks that. Honestly, the positive thing about Owen having this crisis is that it kind of helps Sean, the husband, get through this death of like process this thing that's happening with his wife, because she keeps trying to talk to him and he keeps not wanting to talk about it, which honestly I understand. And she tells Christina, she's like, I think he might not know. Like, I don't think he's lying. I just think he doesn't know, which is fair.
When she asks how he's doing,
like, what are you thinking? Yeah, or like, what are you feeling? She's like, he might actually just not know. I don't think he's lying. I think he really just doesn't know, but which might be true. And sometimes how else do you find it though? How else do you find out without talking about it? So it's hard.
It is hard. It also speaks to the emotional,
clarity.
No.
Intelligence.
Range. Yes, but emotional immaturity that a lot of, I think, men are represented with in some of these TV shows, because Sean guy probably didn't grow up in a household at this point in culture in the 2000s where it was okay to express feelings.
Yeah.
And men were just told, suck up your feelings.
Yeah.
Go be a fucking man.
Yeah. Which is bad advice.
Right. Which is kind of mirrored with the Tommy, Nick, and Phil, because they're we explored and did these things as men. And Alex is like, you almost fucking died as men. Yeah. Like, calm down.
At what cost?
Yeah. So it's very interesting. and I see a lot of that, you know, kind of in TV shows, which I like. But so when he goes back into the hospital, the cure is there, then Kim kind of has these moments where she's like, why do you care?
And she says, like, maybe you don't understand, but at a certain point, death stops being the thing that is scary.
Yeah. Oh, man, this was such a fucking good scene.
Yeah. She says death isn't the thing that's scary. Hope is, because you and everyone around you is just clinging on to hope that is not going to come.
Yeah.
And at that point, what is more damaging?
And she says, I'm not afraid of this. Why are you?
Yeah. Which is a good question, especially as someone in the medical field. And again, we see why. It makes the one for one adds up real easy.
Yes.
He lets Dan die, which again was the right choice. And he tells that to Sean. He's like, there will be a moment when her face relaxes and all the pain she has been in for months leaves her body.
Yeah.
And you will know unequivocally that you made the right choice. And you need to hang on to that moment, because anything else is about you and this isn't about you. And that's his issue, is because he let Dan die. And, you know, within 60 seconds that medevac shows up.
Yeah.
And the thing is,
let's be real, though.
Had it shown up earlier, or had he maintained Dan long enough, I still don't think Dan would have lived.
Yeah. And if he lives, what quality of life? He would live, but would he live?
Yeah. And it's hard to say. But for sure, I personally, even if he had just kept Dan alive that 30 extra seconds, I don't think he would have lived. He's lost so much blood. They still have to move him, which that there's a good chance that when they move him, all the blood comes out his legs,
which we saw in fucking Private Practice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like with also with Bonnie, like it with Indo train. Indo you like
yeah.
a train.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So there's no guarantee. And that's why he says to Sean, everything else is your own garbage. Because you saying, what if, that's yours. That person has moved. You did your best. You helped him in every way possible. And then the thing you could do to help him was relieve him from that pain. And that was good. That was the right decision.
It was sad, though. Like, Dan had to talk Owen through his own death.
Yeah. But again, I mean, that's kind of what you see with Kim as well.
Yeah, she's having talking to talk Sean
and
through,
Owen through it.
Yeah, the extra layer of
but again, I to her point, when you're closer to it, you're going to have a clarity that no one else does.
Yeah.
And when you're living in that much pain all the time.
Yeah.
You're going to have like a quality of life assessment that no one else can really have.
How fucked up, though, that his insurance was denied at the hospital pharmacy and he's like, I have to go to the ATM to fucking pay for this medicine to kill my wife, and it's not in my pocket.
Yep. Very, very fucked up.
America's medical system. Yeah. I can't imagine they were super expensive, but that's not the point. Like,
well, if he had to go to multiple ATMs, it probably was, because ATMs have like a max of like $200.
What ATM are you going to?
I don't really get money out, but in 2010 there were definitely.
That's fair. I forget 2010 is a time. Is a time that we don't live in right now. The second, yeah. It ultimately turns out where Hunt's trauma, capital all letters,
yeah,
has helped Sean get to that point, and we get the final scene where Sean is like, "Kim, I'm scared."
Yeah,
which is fair. And they lay in bed. She takes the pills. She drinks her wine, and they're in bed together. And he holds her. And this feels like it could have been a death cab for Cutie, I'll Follow You Into the Dark kind of moment.
But he just is there. They're just there for each other.
Yeah.
And it's nice. She doesn't want to be alone in this moment. She doesn't want him to be alone. They shouldn't be. You take vows in marriage.
Yeah.
And they both, I feel like, really followed through with them.
Yeah.
As much as they possibly could. And I think that's a very beautiful thing. It is very hard, and I wouldn't wish it on anybody.
No.
But I also feel like it is very beautiful.
Yeah. It's sad, and they make it through, and ultimately they both make their choices.
Yeah.
And I think Hunt comes out of this as a stronger person. And I hope. It seems like he still clearly needs some very deep therapy.
Oh, for sure. Well, and in therapy, you'll recall that she kept saying, like, this is about what, like, we need to talk about your platoon. And he was like, it's not about my platoon. It clearly is.
It's clearly about
the
platoon.
And when you think about this trauma compounded, like, with the helicopter situation, right?
Right,
this
I even made a note. The fan wings.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Being
or
like
the ceiling fan.
Triggering like the emotional state of like being in the desert, essentially alone, because and now everyone around you is dead. And like that represented like rescue, but it also is like so tied to everything that he experienced in the hours leading up to that. And like not knowing who it was because there was no communication. No one technically knew that they were there. That could have been someone else.
Yeah.
Anyway, so it is interesting also that like Teddy is so tied in with all of this trauma as well.
Which I did not before, obviously, when we're getting this trauma, the writers knew because they had a vision of where they were going.
Right.
But we get the idea of the trauma in Hunt's life before Teddy is even introduced.
Right.
So, man, great job writing this.
I mean, it's really. And again, I think they do a very good job telling the story of his trauma.
Yeah. So a couple of thoughts to round out this episode. Number one, so Teddy goes to Mark's place afterwards and she's like, I helped my patient die today. And Mark's like, do you want to talk about it? And she says,
no.
Let's start to get naked before the fucking door is even closed.
I truly was like, are they going to remember to close the door? Yeah. Is Callie going to come over and close the door on their behalf?
That was intense. I thought when the knock happened, it was going to be Callie on the door saying, Arizona and I just broke up.
Yeah.
So, and then the other thing is we have the end scene with Hunt and Christina.
Yeah.
Do you want to take us through that?
Yeah, it's back again in bed. And then it's him, the flashback of Dan dying and the helicopter showing up. Owen gets out of bed. He's doing the push-ups. He's eating the breakfast again. Christina comes up and she's like, are you okay? And he's like, I'm fine. Go back to bed. And she's like, what are you thinking? Because she's seeing what happened with Kim and Sean. And she like wants to get beyond just, are you okay? Like, what else is going on? And he's like, no, it's nothing. I just can't sleep. Go back to bed. And she's like, I mean, it's probably the middle of the night. So she's like, yeah, okay. Also, though, I do want to shout out Christina in the bedside manner department in this episode is really incredible.
Yeah.
Especially when they make them redo the test and Sean is like, what is that? Like, what's going on? And Christina's like, this is just bullshit. And they're covering their asses for legal reasons. Like
this
test
not
is unnecessary.
Yeah.
Your wife, like the decision she has made is the correct decision. Yeah. I am sorry that we have to do this. We shouldn't have to.
Yeah.
But I think this is a great episode for Christina. And I think we do need to credit a little bit like the empathy and like the not surgical aspect of it.
Yeah.
For her. And like, there's no pushback at all about like, why are
she's
we
gaining
surgery?
Nothing
yeah.
from like a, the way that she has shown us is unless she's learning how to do surgery on a heart, she feels like she's getting nothing
right.
from her work.
There's no pushback. She's very involved.
Yeah.
She like helps Kim like relax and make sure she's comfortable. Like she really
totally
does a lot in this episode in a way that is different from what we usually see from Christina. So I do want to mention that before we get out of it.
Yeah.
And then Owen like has more flashbacks of the happier part of like before the story happened when they're just like playing football and like everyone's there and everyone's happy.
Yeah.
And that's how the episode cuts out. It's a really heavy episode. But
it's
I think
a heavy
it's
episode.
So well done.
In the opposite of the heaviness, there's a couple of minor things that I wanted to call out from Tommy, Phil, and Nick.
Okay.
If we can circle back to that.
Yeah.
When they're introducing all of these guys slowly, one at a time. Number one, Nicole, when she catches Charles checking out her ass, and she goes, "What are you looking at, Chachi?" Funny. When Tommy was explaining that he didn't jump out of the helicopter.
Yeah.
Because
freaking
the avalanche.
Awesome.
Yeah. Like, freaking awesome, dude. I'm like, okay, that is terrible. And then when Hunt's like, yeah, this wound is too small. Don't need surgery, but you do need some staples. And they're like, oh, is it going to hurt? And Lexi's like, not too bad. And the guy's like clearly in a ton of pain.
Well, they're like, the lidocaine shot will hurt worse. And I'm like, I would be like, I don't care.
Yeah.
That's the one I want.
Yeah, I want none of it. So that was just like a couple of things with them. Their storyline just was so interesting and sweet. And
I loved their little friendship.
When he's like, when Mark was like, oh, you climbed Kilimanjaro? And Tom was like, yeah, check out this picture because I made it to the top. These other guys got altitude sicknesses like bitches. And he shows him the picture. He's like, that's not Kilimanjaro.
That's a child.
That's my, oh, sorry. That's my daughter is a ladybug.
So cute.
And when Mark shows it to Callie, it's like, you don't want one of those?
So
you're telling
cute.
Me you're going to go your whole life without one of those?
It's so cute.
That cute smile from Callie.
Also, so sweet. When, back to the Kim storyline, when Christina comes in, is like, why did you ask to have your pain meds lowered? And she says, they make me groggy and I don't want to be groggy. And I think that's really an interesting thing as well.
Yeah.
A very like intentional choice.
Yes.
I like that.
Yes.
I'm trying to just look through and see if there's anything else because we should probably wrap it up. Unfortunately, the
yes.
end is nigh.
We're
doing okay.
We've
but
made it. We've
I'm
made
still
it pretty
sad
perfect.
That I have to leave.
Yeah. You don't have to.
Well,
you're making a choice.
I do have to.
You're making a conscious
you
choice.
You made a choice to live here.
My wife made a choice to
no,
live
no.
here. My wife made a choice
you
to live
made
here.
Made a choice to live here first.
Okay.
You made a choice to be born here, and that's on you.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So let's rate this.
All right.
You go first.
This episode is a 4.5.
Okay. I think for me, it's like a 4.8 because I think they just do such a good job telling this story in a way that like is very cohesive and makes a lot of sense. And also just the way it all wraps up and ends together and really just makes sense, A, as to the trauma that has been referred to, and B, as to Owen's like hang up on this specific case. Obviously, like, not a great Derek episode as far as, again, not a good Derek episode in regards to Meredith, but like a pretty fine Derek episode in regards to being a doctor.
Yeah. And as a learning, he's learning how to be chief.
And a good
episode for Weber.
Yeah. Coming back into the Weber Derek relationship, like,
yeah.
happy to see that mending.
Minus the I'd hit her hard. It
great
was a good
Mark
episode.
Episode.
Yeah. Good Mark episode. It's setting up a lot that I'm very curious about with the Cali and Arizona thing.
Yeah.
So I'm very curious about that storyline. And then also, it just, I feel like they want us to be rooting for Owen and Teddy to get together. I feel like they're just they're creating a situation where we are rooting for that.
Mm. You feel like you're meant to, but you don't feel like you are?
I don't feel myself rooting
yeah.
for Owen and Teddy.
Same.
But I feel like
I love Christina. So
yeah, but I feel like there's a lot. I mean, it was his commanding officer's dying wish to propose to Teddy.
Who gives a shit?
Owen.
Well,
and that's what we're being led to believe.
but that man didn't know Christina, so it's fine.
That's fair. It's a good point.
So yeah, I think is a 4.8. But I just think it is a very, very good episode. It is very heavy and very difficult, but it does a good job accomplishing the story that it's trying to tell. Make a prediction about Owen and Teddy and Christina.
I don't. Something's going to happen between them. There's going to be an instance where it's going to break. It's going to hit a breaking point, and Owen and Teddy are going to kiss or just go right to fucking. And Christina's going to find out. And then Mark's also going to find out. And then they're going to have sex.
Who?
Mark and Christina.
Okay. What about...
They're not... That part is actually not part of my prediction, but I do think
yeah.
there's just too much history between Teddy and Owen.
Yeah.
And I'm just being led that direction.
What about Derek and Meredith and Derek's bullshit?
They're going to be fine.
Meredith being a who.
Meredith is a who now, and Derek, I guess, is the Grinch. In this scenario,
that
or Derek is Max.
I don't think Derek's Max.
Derek is just the dog. I really don't have a lot to think through on those particular storylines, but
yeah.
I do think that Jackson, my prediction with Jackson is he's going to very quickly come into the fold within the group. He finds himself being kind of this emotional support to people
yeah.
around. Other than Alex, who Alex clearly just is a dick to everyone.
We didn't get a lot of Alex's episode.
Yeah.
Like, he was just kind of doing surgery.
Yeah.
Which is fine.
So I'm trying to think if there's any, but I still think that Callie and Arizona are going to break up.
Okay. And, Teddy and Mark will, because she's gonna,
I don't know if they will. I think, I don't know. In this, edition of my head's creation, Teddy and Owen have something that happens, but Mark recognizes, okay, I've cheated on people before. I get it. Let's grow together because we want the same things. But Christina and Owen are going to break up and Hunt's going to leave.
Okay.
Teddy's going to stay to be with Mark.
Okay. Well, I think that's it then. So we'll probably wrap it up.
Yeah.
We do have to go get on an airplane. Sadly, this has been delightful. We will be together again in a month. And we'll be so excited for the next time we'll do more fun things. So thank you guys all so much for listening. Thank you for sharing. Please continue to share. Follow us on Instagram, TikTok, all the things. Be on the lookout for more content because we're going to have some more to post soon. And tell everybody you see, everybody everywhere. Thank you all to those who continue to tag us on Instagrams and TikToks of other people talking about Grays and kind of spreading the word.
And Reddit.
I do think a lot of people are finding us that way, and I think it's really cool. So thank you for doing that. And we're just so thankful that we don't have any trolls trying to spoil it for Carbon. It's really cool because that would suck a lot. So thank you guys for being just like the coolest community ever. We really like it. And we just are excited to have it. And on that note, if you see Carmen walking down the street, remember,
no spoilies. Don't even think about spoiling it. Don't even have a dream where you accidentally subconsciously think about spoiling it. Don't do it. Don't just remove that from your vernacular. And we appreciate you all. And we will see you all in the next one.